Hey everyone, and welcome to the Signals from the Frontline, your every Wednesday live broadcast brought to you here by Frontline Gaming. We are your hosts, Kicker, the Chief of Serial, and Sigilite of the FLG, Nikki D. Cannon, Flannel Flannon, producer extraordinaire. Oh, and he's got the eyebrow today, and I'm Seth, the Mad Doctor competitive correspondent. How has everyone been doing?
Hey guys, I missed you. It's been a full 7 days since we talked.
You and I've talked more than that, but yeah. I get it. Don't lie to the audience. You talk to me more than once every 7 days.
Yeah, I do. I do. I like to call you Seth when I'm hobbying.
I know.
You know, just
you called me literally as I was sitting down in the theater for Dune.
Yeah, I know. But I'm like, maybe he's bored. Maybe before the movie. I don't know. Yeah, no. Okay. Well, we have to talk about Dune. But first, everyone, thank you for joining us. If you're in chat, if you're listening to a podcast, consider watching us live every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're not sure if we're going to keep on doing live or if we're going to go to like super high production value pre-recorded stuff.
Yeah, it's an idea. We're talking around. Let us know what you think. Yeah,
tell us what you think. But we do love chat. That's kind of the biggest thing. We love you guys. I got to tell you, my hobby progress this year. My hobby progress this week.
Yeah, it's always done this year.
That's it. Those are the ghost keels. There we go. So I've got three beautifully painted ghost keels. We all know Tau on the horizon, and I don't play Tau, but I love Kroot, and I know that they need a few heavy hitters. So I've got three of these ghost keels ready to go. They're super weathered using this Monument Hobbies Noosh project. It's this Monument Hobbies product to weather them, and it looks gorgeous, and it was super easy to do. But my real hobby progress, the stuff that I was literally working on like 3 minutes ago that my fingers are bleeding from all the X-Acto knife cuts, because there's like fresh army, fresh X-Acto knife blade. That's kind of my mentality. And there's definitely a lot of blood on those models right now. But anyway, that's
you
a top
bonded with your towel. Did you know about the bonding knife ritual? Because you just did it. Do you know about that lore-wise, Kicker? Let's find out how much of a Tau player you are.
Yeah, I have heard. But yes, I'm working on multiple top-secret projects. Something that's not so top-secret that I have been working on, though, Rocky Mountain Open. That is next week. And I'm like, oh, geez, I better like figure out how many tables to rent and get...
It is next week.
Yeah, we added a whole nother building there, and I was like... I don't actually know how many tables we can fit in there. I need to get like my diagrams out and whatnot. So that was a fun game of Tetris. But Seth, you, my friend, you got some hobby progress. Please tell me progress. Carry our, you know, our show tonight.
Yeah. So if folks remember last week after Cherokee, I did bring home some Tyranids and I had done the blue and the green, and I was waiting for some paints to come in that I ordered from FLG to do the carapace. I got a wide variety of purples. and then I debated on what to do, and I actually went to one of our friends here in chat, Dean Pritchard, also winner of Best Painted at Cherokee. Asked him how to do his coconut crab scheme. What was his method? So I gave it a try, that little speckle polka dot pattern on the carapace, and it came out pretty well. I was pretty happy with it.
It looks so good.
And honestly, the thing that was surprising, it actually didn't take that long. I thought it was going to be a nightmare. I was going to do one gaunt and be like, Dean, you're insane. I quit. And just dry brush those things. But it came out pretty well. So
have you ever done this style of stippling before or whatever? No,
nope, okay. Never.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to keep trying to keep going with that army. This army is kind of a paint project. I don't have a defined list or when am I going to try to take it out to an event. So I'm just kind of plugging along with that. So working on that. I, of course, went and saw Dune. We'll talk about that more in our nerd news. And then I've been playing a lot of Helldivers with actually one of our judges, Jorge. Side note, Helldivers, there is friendly fire on. And Jorge, he's got my back. If anyone accidentally shoots me, Jorge comes up and executes them afterwards. So don't mess with Jorge, folks.
Seth, you weren't the only one playing video games recently. Yeah. I think Nikki D, were you playing some video games? Come on, man.
Yeah, I was. I was before the show in our green room. We were talking about this, and I was sharing that I spent about 3 hours on Monday night playing Age of Empires 2, the old classic computer PC game. It's the one video game that my dad likes to play, that he enjoys playing, and that's kind of the one where I get time to video game with my dad, who told me as a teenager I was spending too much time playing video games, not enough time spending outside and doing things like talking to girls or, learning social skills. But turns out I did both, Dad, and now was asking to play video games. But I did more than just play video games this week. I did also get some hobby time in. And after Cherokee last week, I said I was going to switch things back to Nurgle, and I am actively doing that. So I've been slap chopping. I did a Demon Prince of Nurgle. And then I've got a Poxbringer that's there. I built a bunch of models and dry brushed them as the first step to the slap shop. I am waiting to get my Militarum green contrast paint, though. It's a pretty dull green, so Kicker, you would love it. But that's going to be the armor panels. Three
bottles of that stuff. I got two in the, you know, two is a backup.
You need some. I got it by the gallon.
Yeah, I got it.
Yep. Yep. So I'm waiting for those to come in so then I can do it. So the Demon Prince is not fully finished, but the Poxbringer is. And then I'm working actually right now on my painting desk before the show, painting up three Death Shroud. And I got to say, the Slap Chop, really, really good on, works really well on these models. So pretty exciting stuff.
Sweet. All right. Sweet. Well, Kicker, why don't you take us on to what's been going on in the industry?
And we do have quite a few things, especially coming from the GW front. We're going to talk about some recent announcements slash things that were broadcasted by GW. First, this Dark Oath army set. I know I kind of ambushed our producer here. This was not in the original notes. And I was just like, we got to talk about it. This, I think, was released or announced a day or two ago. Holy fish sticks. It's cool. I don't like dark chaos-y stuff in general, but this is kind of this barbarian horde for Age of Sigmar that looks really, really cool. Seth, conversion potential, what do you think? Or is this purely...
I could definitely see some people using like the, I don't know how to describe it. It's called the Wilder Fiend. It sort of looks like a rat monster moose thing. I don't know. I could totally see that being a chaos spawn.
Who's such a chaos player?
Dark Oath Marauders. 100% those could be cultists. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, Kicker, if you wanted to go for a Chaos Guard, the Dark Oath Feld Riders, I mean, that could totally be some cavalry for you.
I was thinking this could be Rough Riders of some sort. Nikki, what did you think? Did you like thoughts?
So I heard it described as, it looks like it's a mythical creature, the Wendigo, what it appears to be, or something like that. But the thing I'll note about this, so on...
It's got gingivitis, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So on Saturday, this was part of the Warhammer World Anniversary. Games Workshop did a stream reveal and had a couple different things that we'll talk to other things. But I'll note from this, though, that this Dark Oath band was the first part that was released, and there were folks that kind of did some internet sleuthing and found some pictures or video for other things, and then that was, you know, when Games Workshop, I think later this week, had done the unveiling of the whole range. So there was some talk of that it's a whole additional chaos army for Age of Sigmar. It is not. It looks to be that it's replacing or updating the Chaos Marauders range.
Oh, which
those were old, old models in Warhammer Fantasy that have not been updated in Age of Sigmar. And so with this, the Slaves to Darkness faction in Age of Sigmar appears to basically, it's going to be all new models. So if you like Slaves to Darkness, if you're curious about Slaves to Darkness, once this comes out, and we don't have a release date yet, but effectively everything in their model range will be new for Age of Sigmar. So Slaves to Darkness, very popular army. They look awesome. They've got lots of cool stuff that's there. They look cool. I'm not going to get into them, but
I was like, Nikki D, you keep saying you're going to go to play some AOS. Is this going to be your army?
They are not Skaven, so no.
Okay. Well, we got another army that's getting a facelift. It was the Empire. Well, I guess it's the Cities of Sigmar. So they're getting more and more models, but specifically more Witch Hunters. There's just a lot of Witch Hunters for the humans in Age of Sigmar, and these also
there's a lot of witches.
There's a lot of witches, there's a lot of bad to kill, right? But this set is for Warcry. You'll be able to use it for Underworlds, I'm sure. And, of course, Age of Sigmar. I don't know the name of these things, but they got this cool dude wielding two pistols. And I'm just like, I love that model, that pose. Did you see him, Seth? Witch Hunter.
Little gunslinger guy, yeah.
He's got some dreads, and then he's got two pistols. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty sweet. So we're getting those models. But let's talk about this thing that Nikki D alluded to, the reveals from the Warhammer World Anniversary. This is one of those, you know, big previews.
There was only one reveal. What are you talking about?
Yeah. One reveal. Just the one reveal. There we go. If you're watching right now, there
it is. Yes, it's the Big Mac.
Get it out of your system. Talk about the one reveal that matters to you that was at Warhammer World.
Okay, it's a Big Mac. It's got he's got exo armor. Kicker, follow me here. You're a Big Mac. You're in exo armor. You got to get attached to a unit. What unit in the Orc Codex are you being attached to?
I mean, it's a big mech, so it's got to be, I guess, Luda. Are Luda's kind of like a big
Killikans.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
I'm putting my money on Killikans. Oh, I want that thing to be able to lead a unit of Killikans. It's going to be fantastic.
What about Dreadnoughts? What about leading Dreadnoughts, too?
Right now, I think they're only units of one, so it'd be kind of weird to attach them. But, Killikans can be units of 3 to 6, so I'm like, that dude could totally go on that unit.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. That'd be pretty sweet. Or what if he gets the rule, kind of like Guard have the tech, the engine seer, whatever the hell
it's called. Yeah, yeah. The base mechs have that where, like, if they're near a vehicle, yeah, they're
loan up and they can buff the vehicle.
I could get behind that too, but I kind of really just want him to be a little stomp a unit, and because he's got a little teleport ability they previewed where, like, when his unit moves, they just ignore all the intervening terrain. So I'm like, bro, could just teleport around with Killikans. This would be amazing. So if you haven't written the rules yet, please hear my cries and add the ability to let this man join Killikan units. I will have an eternal fun teleporting units of Killikans around with him.
Should we talk? I guess we need to address this. Let's just call it an issue, or I guess the fact. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, make anyone more biased one way or another how we frame this, but let's just talk about the simple fact that this is coming in a box set. This box set has, a Stompa in it.
It's got some boys. It's got.
Yeah. How do we feel about that? That this brand new miniature is, you know, because it's one thing if it's like a normal box set, but a Stompa is a pretty unique model to be attached to.
Well, yeah, and it's and to be frank, it's an older model. Now, you know, you're a newer Orc player, you don't have a Stompa, that's great. But, like, I already have two Stompas. I don't necessarily need a third. So it was kind of interesting to see, like, you know, when they did the last edition for Orcs, they released all of the Beast Snaga stuff in a box with the Codex, and it was like, oh, these are all brand new models. I was like, give me the box. It's great. Fantastic. So I think it's a bit of an interesting call there. I mean, GW has definitely shown over the last, you know, few years that they will release those characters eventually in a separate set. It just means for a while it might be a little hard to get your hands on one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it and who knows? Some people might be very, very excited. And Seth, for all we know, there's some crazy, crazy synergy there between this dude and the whatever the big Stompa. Custodes are also getting some love. Got some love this past weekend, and we know that they've got a Codex. Ooh,
the four stunty Custodes.
Yeah, Custodes. Neither one of us, Nikki D, you don't play Custodes, but you're like the closest to a Custodes player out of the three of us, because it's kind of, I don't know, it's like the closest thing, man. You're the closest player.
He has flannel on, definitely. Look at those pants. That man is wearing flannel pants.
You
therefore, it is a Nikki D faction.
Do you like this new model? Do you like anything that they talked about? Is this something to get excited about? Or is this just kind of another character that's not going to be, you know?
What I have seen and heard from, you know, teams that I'm a member of that do kind of competitive play or just, you know, that sort of thing, Custodes don't really have a character problem currently. Right. It's a pretty small range, and what they kind of need is more units or specifically more units that are not from the Forge world. Right. And that's the big part, I think, where a lot of people were hoping for a Custodes unit, not necessarily just a character, but we had seen a silhouette months ago, right? That was very obviously, this guy that we're now seeing. So everybody was pretty much expecting this to come along. There's folks, I think my favorite has been the head of Danny DeVito photoshopped onto this guy, I'm a fan of that. If somebody wants to photoshop,
you know, someone's gonna make a 3D printed Danny DeVito's head that fits on that sculpt, right?
Naturally.
Yeah. So that part, if somebody else wants to photoshop in, you know, the rest of the cast of Always Sunny or perhaps Matilda, right? Danny DeVito.
I was gonna go with Junior.
Junior's a good one. Twins, right? Like, twins, you can have him, and then like Trajan Valoris, but it's Arnold Schwarzenegger's head, you know? So like the two of them, like
that's what's gonna win, you know, LVO best painted next year, right? Or best appearance, right?
Twins,
you know?
Themed Custodes army.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so we got Custodes, we got Orcs, we got some dark you know, Oathband stuff, we got some gunners for, you know, Age of Sigmar, whatever, all this fun stuff. The real highlight, and there's no question about this, I know Seth really likes his Orcs, but the real highlight is this fucking, sorry I curse, but it's the gnomes, man. It's just the gnomes. Who the hell doesn't like a good garden gnome? As you know, I mean, like I just look at
that orc and you're gonna tell me these are the highlights.
The gnomes, and look, they got furry friends. There's the like a fox. I think there's a badger there. I mean,
badger, yeah.
There's a badger. Okay, so confirmed that is a badger. Like the gnomes, I have no idea if the gnomes are traditionally in the fluff of you know, fantasy. I don't know. The point is that, hey, we've got garden gnomes. They even painted them to look like garden gnomes. I mean, I am very happy about these models. Chat, tell us what you think. Are these the real winners of the recent reveal? You know,
kicker's allowed to have bad takes, folks. It's okay.
Well, you know what though, man? Like, I love that they're doing these like weird, like quirky armies. Like they had the hobbits or whatever, the hobbit army. They got the snotling army. And now we've got gnomes. All for Blood Bowl. Okay, we should talk about it. It's just Blood Bowl, and the conversion potential for Blood Bowl minis into 40K Age of Sigmar is very challenging. Those models are not very not very forgiving when you do want to try to convert with them. So
all right, Kicker, I've got some updates from the chat about the gnomes for Blood Bowl. Yep. Gnomes, yeah. Mikey G, our friend Mikey G, says these look like prime chaos spawn to me.
Yeah, this works.
Battle gooses go hard.
Yeah.
I think it does bring up a question. I mean, if you wanted to paint these as a Canada goose, yeah. Anyone who knows not to mess with Canada goose.
I fear no
goose. Seth is an avian raptor professional.
I am looking at you, all of the geese kingdom. I fear no goose.
Whoever takes Seth on his next tournament better bring a couple of these geese. Just put them on the table, challenge them. No, I chat. Thank you for supporting me. I really do hope to see some gnomes on the table, regardless of the game system. All right, let's talk about the pre-orders that are going live this weekend. We've got some more Dawnbringer action for Age of Sigmar. Those are those kind of, I guess, the thematic storyline that they're following. This one's focusing on the Daughters of Cain, which is convenient because there's this new box set coming out, which is focusing on the Daughters of Cain. I think it's called the Corn Host. Is that the name of it? Does that sound accurate, guys? It's got a bunch of, you know, Daughters of Cain. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. There's the photo right there. Crone Host, who's there. And then
K.R. Quinn, correct us. They are called Cobra Chickens.
Oh, Cobra Chicken. Dude, that is actually a very good name, and I will be using that on a daily basis now because we walk by a park every day and there's geese there. Yeah, so Cobra Chickens, thank you so much. That is the new name. My son will grow up. My three-year-old son will grow up referring to geese as Cobra Chickens. Cobra Chickens. So yeah, we've got this nice set here. That's fun. And we've got some more Stormcast. There's a Spearhead. Remember, they changed the name to Spearhead. Yep. We've got a Spearhead of Cities of Sigmar. We've got a Spearhead of Flesh Eaters Courts. So these big value boxes that are all coming out that tend to be in line with the current
usually a good deal. Grab them while you can.
Grab them while you can because it tend to be a good value. Now let's talk about frontline gaming news. Yes, all Rocky right. Mountain Open is next week. We have well over 200 players for 40K. It's significantly grown from last year, which is really exciting. Age of Sigmar is also way bigger than last year too. So yeah, it's solid. Oh, and this year we have good lighting in the entire. We're not putting anyone in like the crummy like back garage. We did that last year because we didn't know what we'd never been to that venue. We had no idea, and not 40K, but one of some of the other game systems were kind of playing in the semi. Dark corners of the hall, and I felt terrible.
Thematic cave systems.
Yeah, thematic cave systems where nobody could see how beautifully painted their army or their opponent's army was, which is always a challenge. So yes, we will not be using that space this year. So everyone will have good lightings. A pro tip this year, guys, bring snacks, water, etc. This is a really chill venue. There will be a bar on site open for, like 4 or 5 hours in the afternoon. There'll be food trucks, but definitely feel free to bring in snacks and water and whatever you need to keep you going through the day. This is a very relaxed vibe there where they don't care if you bring outside food.
Now, Kicker, in your notes, you just have one 3-word phrase that I have to ask. Roadhouse?
Texas Roadhouse, people.
Is that nearby?
There happens to be a Texas Roadhouse right by the motel that a bunch of us are staying at. So if anyone wants to join us for Texas Roadhouse one night after dinner, the Frontline Gaming crew, as well as, by the way, Frontline Gaming crew, Mike, if you're listening to this, or Adam, if you're listening to this, we're going to go get Texas Roadhouse one night.
Little do you know, but that's where you'll be eating.
Well, I think I'm the only one that's rented a car, so yeah. You guys are riding with me. But anyway, if anyone wants to join us, just talk to us at the event and we'll all carpool over there.
Mike and Adam, if you don't want to eat at Texas Roadhouse, talk to other people at the event. Let them take you to other restaurants.
They have to find their own ride to the hotel then. All right, guys.
Look, I'm certain some players will save them. I mean, help them find some dinner.
They have really good sweet potatoes and barbecue sauce. Come on, what else do you want? All right.
I enjoy as much as the next, but I see you eating there every night. And yeah. I've unfortunately done that on one road trip before with a coworker. I don't recommend
that's
it.
That's so good. Okay. I mean, it's okay. All right, fine. Oh, maybe only two out of the three nights. All right, moving along. So BAO Old World... BAO, this is our event. We did this is in May, so it's a few months out, but tickets will be going up live soon. But we did a little pre-sale. Surprise! If you're in the know, you're in the know. We did a special pre-sale for all the Old World fanatics out there, because yes, this will be the first event that we're bringing the old world two, I guess the old, right. The new old world two,
and the new old world.
Yeah. The new old world, right. It sounds like a Disney movie or a Disney song. Anyway, the new old world will be at BAO.
And we right. special- Steve, Joel, I'm going to need you to do a cover of A Whole New World, but with the old world.
Yes. Please do that. Sorry. Please do that. Yes. No, we do need a cover song like that. Anyway, so this special pre-order package is live until the normal tickets are live. This package, I'm just going to say it right now. It includes an entire Frontline Gaming mat for, you know, size for old world, any mat you want from our website. It's part of the package deal. It's a pretty cool setup we're doing. But once the tickets go live, normally the pre-sale package will get removed and you have to get your standard ticket. Another cool thing that I'm doing for BAO is all tickets will include swag. So the tickets, when I mean swag, I should probably say merch, because swag is like little tokens and whatnot. No, they're actually going to include t-shirts, pint glasses, magnets, 40K tickets are include objective markers. So basically every ticket will include a lot of good stuff. The ticket's gone up a few dollars, not much, but it includes swag that you're basically getting way more for your buck this year.
More a lot of people.
Yeah. And by, you know, having all the tickets include t-shirts, guess what? We can suddenly, you know, bring down the cost of those t-shirts, which means we can bring down the overall ticket price and get a lot more stuff. So yay there. Atlantic City Open. That is the event that takes place in June. And I had a really fun call with our artist, Mr. Goat Boy. He's wrapping up the artwork for ACO. So once we get that artwork, we can go live. And also we're going to have Simon. These are the guys that make the game Song of Ice and Fire. They are fully supporting the Song of Ice and Fire event at Atlantic City Open. So if you are a Song of Ice and Fire player, you definitely want to make it to ACO this year. And if we're just going on trend, ACO tends to be bigger than Cherokee. Cherokee was both you guys were there. Cherokee was very large. So ACO should theoretically be larger than that. So, you know, will we hit 300? I don't know. Let's go for it.
I think we will.
You think we'll hit it? Sweet. And Champions Cup, guys, I am proud to announce we have a brand new team that joined. This is a team that we had to keep their name kind of hidden. And I'm going to keep it hidden for one more day because I have an agreement with them. So tomorrow we'll make the announcement. We have one more club that is sending a team for the Champions Cup. And this is a big one, guys. So very, very excited to have them coming.
Kicker, is this your local club?
No.
Did you just do a plug for your local team?
Right. Building up all this hype for the Louisiana team. I would love for Louisiana to send a team to go. As of right now, I don't think they're sending a team, which is really sad. But come on, guys, let's do it. All eight players here in Louisiana, let's do it. Let's make it happen. I will play. I will play on our team. I'm not as fortunate as Nick, who happens to have multiple teams and clubs within, you know, like an RTT every month, right around your corner. You know, you're very
this cool. is the guy that went to three of GTs in a
yeah weeks. Jeez, man, I'm jealous.
Yeah, for the record, I don't advise doing that. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing.
Hey, Nikki D, while you're here joining us, why don't you take us into nerd news? We need to know what's going on in the world of pop culture.
Well, the big thing this past weekend was the cinematic release of Dune Part 2. So wraps that part up. Seth and I both went and saw it this weekend, and we said that we would do a spoiler-free review. Now, I will note the notion of doing a spoiler-free review for a story that already had it's a book that came out 59 years ago, and it had a movie. It's had multiple miniseries, but but this is a different take on it, right? And you know, from that part, there's been a lot of very positive reviews about Dune. Part two. I saw some places saying that, like, this is the best science fiction movie since Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back, like, which is obviously huge praise. And, you know, being there in the theater and for myself seeing it, I loved it. Was absolutely a spectacle. You know, the scenes, if you saw part one, you know that so much of it is going to be just amazing visuals, amazing sound that goes to it. The characters are all, you know, fleshed out and nuance that goes to it. It's a almost three-hour movie that doesn't feel like it's 3 hours long, and unless you're in the situation that Seth was in.
I lost feeling in my toes. It felt like 3 hours.
Seth, why was that?
Theater was cold. Like it was 60 out, and I think they had the AC on, and I think it was 50 in that theater. Like, whew. You said like it didn't feel like 3 hours. I was like, it felt like it to me at the end. I was like, come on, boys, let's keep this moving along. Like, we know where we're going. Yeah. Come on, Paul. Keep it moving, bud. Keep it moving.
Yeah. But I thought it was good.
I love the visuals. I particularly like the visuals on the Harkonnen home planet. with the Black Sun. That was, I really enjoyed that. It was just, it was a really, really cool effect. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It was, I'll enjoy it significantly more from the comfort of my appropriately heated homes TV sometime.
Seth, you do need to talk about something that you can only get from a movie theater. I don't think your home has this. Was this, you sent in our group chat.
I did get the sandworm popcorn bucket. Popcorn. My wife judged me harshly. I said, look, we're getting the full experience. In fact, when I got it, you know, it was like the last one at the theater when I picked it up and I brought it up to the counter and I was ordering and I ordered popcorn because if you're going to have a Dune freaking sandworm popcorn bucket, I'm getting some popcorn. And the you know, I don't know, it's not waitress, it's not cashier, I guess, was like, you know, do you want me to put the popcorn in this? Some people don't. And I was like, no, put the popcorn in the bucket. I'm gonna reach my hand through Shai Galoot's mouth and get me some popcorn. I know the opening is not large enough for my hand to get through, so I can only get like fingertips worth of popcorn.
Yeah, it looked functionally not the best for
your hand. I could not, so I had to take the lid off to keep eating the popcorn.
Yeah, of course. Well, okay. So overall, we're happy with Dune. Yeah. I hope to see it. I hope to watch, refresh my memory and watch the first one on the flight to Rocky Mountain, and then maybe go see it right after. Nikki D, there's one other thing I know that you wanted to talk about. This is important to you, right? I mean, let's
not important to me per se because I haven't watched it yet, but the live action versions of stories are you know, a thing that's coming around. They can be a little bit hit or miss here as we go through different things, but there is the live action version of Last Airbender, right, on Netflix, and that has been set up for seasons 2 and 3. So, or has been renewed, excuse me, for seasons 2 and 3. So, you know, that part there, I think, is really interesting that that part has already been renewed or set up again, and we'll see what happens or, you know, what comes from that here. But the first season, I've heard very, very good reviews of. I haven't watched it myself, so I'm interested to see what it's like, but wanted to throw that out there for everybody, or just let our audience know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we've got last, you know, and you know, Netflix also tends to do good stuff too, right? Netflix has generally got a pretty
Hit or miss. Like, to me, the Netflix versions or recreations of it, like, it's either they do a really good job of it or not so good. And there's really not much in between. That's generally been my feeling. But this is one where I think, I haven't watched, but what I've heard from people who are fans of the cartoon show is that this is one that it's, you know, generally been pretty favorable and that they've enjoyed it. So it's on my list to watch. I'm looking forward to watching it, but have not done yet.
Dang. All right. And is it good, Seth?
Oh, yeah, it's very good.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, it's very good. We're enjoying it.
Hey chat, we just want to make sure you can hear Seth. I can hear Seth. I just want to make sure
I'm here. He's here. I see myself.
He's good and back now.
He's good and back.
Yeah. He was trying to find his popcorn holder there to show us, and
I don't know what happened. All my screens went crazy for a minute.
Guys, one thing that is kind of just, let's just call it weird. There's a Call of Duty with a 40K skins. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
Call played, of like, Duty's Call been doing all kinds of skins. They're just trying to get all any it's, fandom
it's
at all.
Money grab or is it just a licensing?
It's a money grab. It's a money grab. It's straight. You pay dollars. You get 40K skin on your character in Call of Duty.
I mean,
if you enjoy it, have fun with it.
I played a lot of Call of Duty. Like, that was my game of choice. All right. Like,
you can tell by the haircut. So,
I don't know. I mean, and the fact that I can talk to my friends that still play video games that don't play 40K and like, hey, you know, like this 40K thing, like, oh, that's cool. You know, like they've seen it, they heard about it. So it's nice to hopefully get some people that aren't in the know about our wonderful hobby, you know, getting at least some sort of knowledge about it. Let's jump into the main segment, fixed versus tactical. Seth, take it away.
What are we talking about? Secondaries?
Yeah, we're talking about secondaries. I mean, I guess. I mean,
I know. I was just giving you our time. So, yeah, we wanted to kind of get folks' opinions on whether they take fixed or secondary or fixed secondaries or tactical secondaries and kind of break down some thoughts on when they're good and when they're not. So Kicker put up a poll on the Frontline Gaming community page. Always be checking out the community page every week. You'll see Kicker posting polls. You'll see me posting Hobby Progress. So it's a great chance to interact with us. 60% of people said they take tactical.
Yeah.
And kind of a few comments we pulled from there. Tino Miranda says, depends on the matchup or army, which I tend to agree with that one. Robert Desmo says, knights on both flavors. It's always fixed. Everything else is tactical.
Which makes sense, right? Knights are kind of a very specific army, and you know,
yeah, and they're going to give up a lot of bring it down. So that's definitely, if you have the tools to kill them, you might as well be getting points for doing it.
Brian Luffman said something very similar. It depends on the army he's taking as well as the army he's facing. But in his opinion, you know, tactical is best for tournaments. But, you know, like I said, you got to depend, you know, got to see what your opponent is taking. What did you think about Ian Jenkins, his comment?
Yeah, so he said that CP economy and higher scoring secondaries for tactical is what makes a difference. I tend to agree with that. I think we'll get to it a little bit more. But if you have an army that doesn't have a way to generate CP, like, you know, a Leonidas or whatever, and you have a lot of CP intensive stratagems, having the ability to pitch those cards for extra CP is always useful. So yeah.
And then James, dude, James had a very lengthy multi-chapter comment there in our thread, and it was very useful. Go and read it if you want to. But you know, one of the things he said in there that was really good is that tactical allows for closer games between stronger and weaker opponents. Seth, what do you think? Does that make sense to you? Do you agree with that statement?
I don't know. I think I get what he's trying to say, which is that there's not as a big points gap, or it feels like the game's a little bit, you know, as a weaker opponent, you can lean on the advantages of a tactical to try to stay in those games. So I certainly think that that's a possibility. But yeah, I just have to think about that one a little bit more. That's a good idea, James.
Why don't we go into talking a little bit about what these tactical versus fixed objectives actually are?
Yeah. So, everyone's been pretty familiar with them. I made a list here. I can never remember the full list, so it's always nice to have it. So fixed are the ones that you choose pregame. We have bring it down, which is points for killing enemy vehicles, storm hostile objective, which is points for taking objectives that your opponent controls, engage in all fronts, which is being in all the table quarters, three or four, behind enemy lines, which is getting, I think it's a minimum of one unit wholly within and two for extra points in your opponent's deployment zone. Assassination is killing opponent's characters. Cleanse is doing actions on objectives, and deploy teleport homers is doing actions in midfield or your opponent's deployment zone. I'd like to point out that amongst those, we have two that are kills, bring it down and assassinate, and the rest are essentially board position in some form or fashion. Oh, yeah. So when you're thinking about building a list to play fixed, most of your options are going to be based around getting your models into certain spots on the field. And then kill is very dependent on what your opponent's list is going to bring. So, you know, Kicker and I are playing, he rolls up with a billion Imperial Guard tanks. I want to take bring it down, and then what is my other fixed I take? So just keep that in mind when list building, that a lot of fixed is going to be based around your ability to get to certain places on the table. For tactical, these are ones that we can only draw. And when you have tactical, you have access to all the fixed plus these. And it's secure no man's land, which is a positional one. Capture enemy outpost, which is another positional. Extend battle lines, another positional. Defend stronghold, guess what, Kicker? Another positional. Yeah. Investigate signals. Another positional, overwhelming force and no prisoners, which are your two kills, attempting target, which is another positional, and then Ares and Isle, which is a bit of both. You need to be near the center of the battlefield and not have enemy units there, so that's a bit of both. But again, majority of these are going to be having the ability to get to a certain position on the field at demand. So when you're thinking about tactical and playing tactical, having those fast moving units that can get to certain places, be able to perform actions, be able to do enough OC in the right spot to control objectives. So kind of keep that in mind when you're working with those. So I kind of did a little pros and cons list here, Kicker. But Kicker, before we get into that, what do you tend to play?
I mean, I definitely tend to play tactical. I find it fun. Like, it's kind of exciting. I also am not somebody that, I bring an army list that is as good as it can be using the units I want, which sometimes really hinders my ability to, like, I couldn't play a lot of the fixed and be successful. I need the variability, the options that tactical brings. Yeah. What about you, Seth? I mean, what do you usually play?
You make a good point. I usually play tactical, but if you do want to play fixed, like, I played a lot of fixed when I was playing Votann. And that's because if you're playing a lot of fixed, you need to really have a list that's built to be able to play a few of those positional secondaries every time. And if your opponent gives you a kill that's easier, then you take that. But you really need to be built to take those positional ones.
Just to give us some context, you're playing Votann. What were the secondaries that you typically used as your fixed ones?
So very, very commonly, it would be Cleanse and Deploy Homers.
Okay.
And I had a bunch of small, you know, because of the Sagittars, I broke all my Hearthkin units up into five mans. So I had a bunch of little five man units that I could run onto objectives and cleanse the objective and have someone in the middle of the field to homers and another one to cleanse somewhere else. So I had basically a ton of cheap little MSU things that I could have three actions a turn being performed for points. And then if my opponent was like knights or something where it was like, okay, I have a kill and bring it down, I would take like bring it down and deploy teleport homers or something like that.
Cool.
But the pros, it's a predictable battle plan. So you can list build towards it. You know, this is how I'm going to play almost regardless of what my opponent is across the table. So that really allows you to focus your resources. I had these cheap five-man units. Their entire jobs were to run out, stand on an objective, and do action. The rest of my army was dealing with killing. And so that can really help you build a specific list to complete these. And so you can really kind of have your game plan and make your list work before you even get to the table. It doesn't even necessarily matter what your opponent's doing. We got Ulis Sanders chiming in here in chat with the super chat. If you're building an army to hold two objectives in no man's land, you score 35 to 38 points with homers and cleanse while playing the primary game. And that's also a very good point, Ulis. So I'm spending those units to go do those actions. And the rest of my army is going out and trying to kill you, kicker. But I also have those units on objective, so I'm also playing the primary game with them. And so it kind of doubled down with those units doing that thing. The cons for playing fixed: your opponent knows what you're doing. Start of the game, I am telling you, kicker, I'm taking Clemson homers. That means I'm going to always try to be on two no man's land objectives, and I am always going to have a unit in your midfield or in your deployment zone to do these things. Yeah. So you can say, all right, I know where Seth has to go, what he has to do. I can target those units to remove them so that he can't do those things. It also removes your access to extra CP. So if you don't have a mechanism to get extra CP in your army, like we said, and you got a CP heavy army, losing out on that can be difficult. And then the other thing, math wise, with most of the fixed short of assassinate and bring it down, most of them only give you the maximum 20 points if you do the maximum thing to score it each round. So in the case of cleanse, I would be cleansing two objectives every round. In the case of deploy teleport homers, would be deploying teleport homers in your opponent's deployment zone every round. So once you miss a point on one of those secondaries, you are always going to not have that point. You can't catch up with a really strong turn four or five. So it can be difficult to max points, and if you're playing against a really savvy player that's doing a lot of math and they know you dropped a few points here and there, that you know that there's no way for you to catch up with those points.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's really
a good point about points.
Good point about no, but seriously though, I mean, like, yeah, you can just really screw somebody over one round, right? Just one round,
and you know that they can't catch you with those points. There's no way for them to get those back.
Cool.
But like, you know, you can miss a round of primary. Usually most missions, there's enough ways to score primary that you can miss one round and still get 45 or 50 points on primary on the back half of the game. So that's kind of important to keep in mind. Pros and cons of tactical kicker.
Yeah,
so the first thing I said,
most people tend to take that I take now that, all right. Yep. So
we talked about the extra CP already. That's a great source of CP if you don't have a way to get it, but it makes it difficult for your enemy to predict what you're going to do, kicker.
Yeah.
Because you don't even know what you're going to have to do until the start of your turn. So there's no way I, playing you, can go, I know kicker is going to have to try to control the midfield objective next turn, so I'm gonna flood that with my wraiths because I'm playing Necrons. I'm going to put all my wraiths there to make sure he can't control that midfield objective. I have no way to know if you're going to draw area denial or not. I can try to guess based on what's left in your deck that, like, physically, he's already drawn it. I don't have to worry about that. Or there's a chance he might draw it.
Do you think most people do that? I know that's like a super high level tactic to be able to like really gauge what's in your deck still. But I mean, that seems really challenging. What do you think, Seth?
There's been a few times I've done it, and that's mainly like I'm going first. It's round five. I've scored my primary already because I score top of battle round as the player going first. I then look and see you kickers still have overwhelming force in your deck, meaning you have to kill the units on objectives. So if I don't need to be on the objectives anymore, I might walk my units off the objectives.
Oh, yeah, smart.
But like, that's about it. Like, I can't be like, sometimes I'll try to leave units near corners until I get investigate signals, just in case if I have some spare units. But otherwise, there's not many times where I'm sitting there going, what does Kicker have left? You know, yeah. Oh, he's got some units hanging out in corners and hasn't drawn investigate. I'm going to kill those units. Because odds are, until it gets to the last turn, I'm like, whatever, he might not draw that card and I got other things to kill.
Yeah.
But when you get that last turn, sometimes you can be like, the deck's thin enough. I can look at the sheet and see which one he's already scored and go, okay, these are his possibilities. I don't want him catching me. So I just need to make sure I do whatever I can to prevent him from scoring those if he drawed them. So cons, Kicker. Some cards are just impossible to score.
Yeah. Yeah. The capture enemy outpost. That's really challenging. Like just, yeah. I don't care what army you play. That is challenging.
Yeah. Or if you like assassinate, at least has the caveat of like, if your opponent doesn't have any characters left, you get points, but like bring it down. If your opponent has no monsters or vehicles, Sorry, you just don't get points. There's no caveat on what happens there. Or if you're like your Kicker insane man, infantry extravaganza, but you have one manticore in the backfield hidden behind a wall. You're like, yes, if you can come all the way to my backfield and blow up this manticore, you can have the points. But in the meantime, there's 300 guards bodies between you and my backfield. Yeah. You know? So there are just sometimes you draw things that you literally can't do, which is kind of a bummer. Again, not too much of a bummer though, because you'd be like, I'm going to recycle that for CP. So maybe that helps. It does require you to plan ahead and what you may need to do next turn. So like I go back to investigate signals because that one's kind of difficult because you have to have four units wholly within 9 inches of each table corner to get the maximum score. So there's, and it's an action. So, you know, you got to basically try to be able to move units to get wholly within and still be able to do an action. So you might have to pre-plan a little bit of like, I'm going to leave one guard squad over here and I'm going to have Gaunt's Ghost that's going to be in deep strike. And then I'll leave another squad over here. And if I draw it, then I can move into position and take those points. So you might have to do a little bit of pre-planning on that front. And sometimes the secondaries can really make you do things that you wouldn't necessarily do in the long run of the game. Like particularly you and I are playing, I draw a tempting target. I'm always going to pick the objective that is the hardest for you to get to. And if you're like, I have to overextend to get to that objective. Sometimes the thing you throw out there, I'm like, cool. And now I kill it. And you threw out a unit that you really needed that Bulgrin unit, Kicker, to slow me down. You threw it out there to grab that objective. It was the only thing close enough. And I was like, perfect, kill them.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can mess up your long-term game plan if you're forced to commit to the midfield early because you drew extend battle lines.
Doing something out of order range. I play guard, right? Or something out of an aura range. All of a sudden now you screwed yourself over for the following turn. So yeah. So,
yeah. That's kind of our thoughts on fixed and secondary, fixed and tactical. I think, you know, most people are going to be playing tactical, but there are certainly reasons to play fixed. I know a lot of really good players that'll play fixed, particularly when they have a solid, I kind of like thinking like a solitaire game plan. Like I'm going to do a thing regardless of what you do. I'm going to score 95 points. If you can score 96 points, you're going to win, but I'm going to score 95.
So. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if that starts to change, right? As you know, more codexes drop and more rules become available. Yeah. Like what do people start to lean into one right now though? Like mark our words, it's March 2024. We'll, March 2025 will suddenly, you know, fixed be the way to go. We'll see. I mean, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I mean, it certainly could be a mission packet and they completely change all of this.
Oh, yeah.
March 2025, we might not have fixed in tactical. We might have alphas and omegas. And
removal. If they gave you the same amount of points, I think that'd be kind of spicy, you know. Sweet.
All right. Hopping on over to our community highlights. We got our good buddy, Kelsey. Now, Kicker, for the last few weeks, Kelsey has been a man after my own heart. Building and painting orcs.
Yeah.
This week he betrayed me
and went to Nikki.
And he went to Nikki D and he painted him some Beast of Nurgle.
There we go. Now, Nikki D, why don't you talk about these beautiful painted miniatures done by, you know, community members.
Look at how much love he has.
I mean, if you're listening to the podcast, you can't see just the smile and the happiness on my face here. But I'll note that I also particularly love, this is like a very
goofy sculpt.
Right. No, well, the Beast of Nurgle, I mean, it's kind of supposed, they're supposed to be like this goofy puppy that just like loves things and spreads disease, which but it's the color green here. Kelsey, I may have to follow up with you on that. that color green, it really, really, really reminds me of Slimer from Ghostbusters. Oh gosh, and like, right. these guys, look how vibrant those colors are.
They're just so vibrant.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous thing here. I absolutely love it. Good color for Slimer.
Yeah, I like it. All right. Who else we got? Nick, Seth?
Up next, we have Gerard. We've been watching for a few weeks his display board. His display board is fully complete. Took it to an event, won him some nice awards. So great job, man. Glad to see the final product there. In keeping with people really just abandoning me and going back to Nurgle, Ian posted up his work in progress for his Great Unclean one. This is a big, nasty, slimy-looking thing like they always are. Nikki's bringing it up there. There we go. Boom. Great Unclean one. I mean, that man, he's got some toe fungus and we need to deal with it.
You know, man, it seems like that particular model is a fan favorite to paint.
Oh yeah. People love painting. It's a bigger model, and bigger models are always kind of easier to paint. In my opinion, at least. And yeah, he's just got tons of details. So you can go nuts with him if you want. And then last but not least, I thought this was quite hilarious. Our good buddy Dean, Tyranid painter extraordinaire, posted this up and said it's for his display board, I promise, and it appears to be a large tentacle of some sort with a gargoyle on it.
There's a plan for it.
I'm very concerned about what you're doing in your spare time, Dean, with these tentacles.
I don't want to spoil too much about Dune Part 2, but I hope Dean is taking inspiration from Dune Part 2. End of the movie, Seth, and like there's things riding on a worm.
Okay.
No spoilers.
Somebody can run with that for a display board idea.
All right. Well,
maybe Dean already has.
Thanks, folks, for sharing your amazing paint project with us. We always like to see kind of things as they're coming, how they're growing. Don't be afraid to share. We're always up there every Wednesday posting, myself or Adam Peterson are up there posting. Always share your work. It's great to see how the community's doing. But that's it for tonight, guys. Any final thoughts for the night?
Looks like I have some homework. I got to go watch Dune 1 to refresh my memory.
No, you have to go watch The Fat Electrician. That's a different discussion.
And go watch The Fat Electrician. All right. No, just a lot of hobby time for me. Nikki D, what are you up to, man?
I have an RTT this weekend, so very excited to see some familiar faces there. And playing Death Guard. So I'm excited. Death Guard with some allies. And
Back to Chaos.
Chaos calls. I will say, so my best friend who I grew up playing Warhammer Fantasy with, he kind of follows the show and us talking about it, and he noted, you know, knowing me for 20 plus years and spent so much time together, he's like, you just seem so much happier when you get to talk about Chaos than anything else. So I mean, he knows me as well as anybody, well, like him, my wife, you know, but like he's up there, right? And if he recognizes that in me, I should probably listen to him about it. So
fair enough
for me. Yeah.
All right. Well, Kicker's got more media to consume. I'm going to be working actually on some Necrons, hopefully this weekend, painting a few more models to update my army for a GT later this month. So hopefully that's what I'll be bringing to the hobby progress for next week. But next week, we're going to be talking all about Rocky Mountain Open. Yeah. Nikki D, you won't be with us, but it'll be Kicker and I. So stay tuned for that next week, folks. But until next time, we thank you so much for watching. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Signals from the Frontline. Have a great week, everyone, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Good night, guys.
Night.